Thank you for tuning in to the Precision Rifle Network. I am your host, Jason. And with me today, I have some very special guests. DJ, would you like to say hi?
Hello, everyone.
Amy.
Hello.
And Doug.
How you guys doing?
And finally, Reese.
Hi, guys.
Thank you all very much for joining today. Folks, before we kick the show off, we need to give a shout out to our sponsors. Title sponsor for this podcast is Arkin Optics. You can find out more about Arkin Optics at www.arkinopticsusa.com. Secondly, MK Machining, www.mkmachining.com. Go check out their products. If you purchase something from MK, use PRN10 at checkout and you will get a 10% discount. Coltech, serious gear for serious shooters. That is www.col-tac.com. Again, use PRN10 for 10% discount at checkout. Axel provides superior hearing protection for hunters and shooters. Go check them out at www.goaxel.com. And if you purchase something from them, use PRN15 for 15% discount at checkout. Thank you very much to our sponsors. So again, I'm your host, Jason McBride, and I got a very special guest with me today. So we're just going to go around the room and again, just say your name and give everybody a little bit of background and let them know a little bit about you if they don't already.
Deej Burley. I've been in the shooting game. When they brought the dirt in, I was there. I was guiding the truck in. I don't even know how long. Been a long time. And I've done the, before it was PRS, the center fire thing, bounced all over there. Tried a little F class, a lot of 22, pistol. No, now we got three gun on our resume too.
Yeah.
Yeah, not the wisest thing, but yeah, it definitely gets rid of money for you. That's about all I can think of. I've been shooting since I was, before I was in school, so.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, thank you very much. Amy.
Amy Mummert. Started out mostly deer hunting my whole life. Now I'm getting into the steel targets. Started with center fire and now addicted to the 22s.
All right. Thank you very much. Doug.
Yeah, Doug Bowes. I've been shooting matches for probably about 8 years. Last two or three years, haven't shot as much as I used to. We used to shoot probably 30 to 40 matches a year. Now I put on more matches than I shoot. So that's about it.
Well, it's easier to tell everybody, oh, when I was shooting, I could have cleaned that. Blah, blah. Yeah, yeah, it's so much easier when you're the one doing it.
Reese, how about you?
Hi, guys. I'm Reese Bowes. I've been shooting since I was about 5, but going to competition since I was 8. So almost... Yeah, about 8 years.
Math is hard.
I started out with center fire, and I've moved kind of into the 22s, but I still shoot a mixture of all the different matches, so, yeah.
Awesome, awesome. All right, so we're going to jump into the main topic for this evening, just give you all a little bit of backdrop, and then we'll start getting into some of the details or the main body of the topic for tonight. So a couple weeks ago, Gas and Shooting Center, which all of us in this room right now say we pretty well call home. That is our quote-unquote local shooting range, and we frequent there quite a bit. A lot of great matches, a lot of great events, great people down there, so we absolutely love it. But anyway, a couple weeks ago, Doug here put on a rimfire hunter-style match. It was a team match. It was very successful. Extremely cold that day. What did we start out with on that day? What was it?
I think it was right around zero. I think we averaged probably about 6 degrees for an average for that day.
Yeah.
Probably about 10 mile an hour winds. So
yeah,
made it a little chilly, but it wasn't bad. We had
burn
barrels. Well,
the snow helped, you know, because, you know, it going sideways.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And we had some snow that day, so it was good for wind calls. So,
yeah.
For
yeah.
some people. Yeah. Other people, not so much.
Yeah. So, we had the cold. Snowed for the most part just about all day.
Off and on, yeah.
Yeah, off and on.
Wasn't too bad, so still able to use your rangefinders, which I was thankful for. So.
For the most part,
yeah.
Yeah, I think there was a couple stages where the wind picked up and was blowing the snow, and some people are having some issues getting a good shot on their target to get an accurate range. But, Yeah, I think for the most part, it made finding targets.
Well, I saw more that they were having problems with. They wouldn't be standing where they needed to be to get the range.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Oh, when you ranging that branch in front of you six times in a row, and, oh, yeah, that looks like 70 yards, and it's 160 yards. Yeah. Oh, I'm low. I wonder why.
Yeah, absolutely.
But between the warm clothes and then the burn barrels and just walking around and shooting, it really wasn't. It didn't feel that bad. Once you got up and
well, you were
around.
Moving all day. Our ROs had to stand in one spot.
Yeah, when Doug, moving, though, it wasn't too bad.
Doug had to come and rescue me once, let me go get in the truck and warm up a little bit. But
that's why I had 12 body warmers stuffed throughout my bibs.
Looked like the Michelin man with bibs on top.
I had a body warmer stuck to my back. Well, it was on like one of my layers. And I just, when I got home, I changed into pajamas and everything. And later that night, I was getting ready to go to bed and I moved something in my hamper and I was like, what is so hot? And that body warmer was still so hot, probably almost, I don't know. Yeah. It was that night and I put it on at probably 6 o'clock that morning. So it was.
The new ones last way longer than the old ones. And like the old ones, the old gel ones, I remember as a kid, you know, they'd get you the gel ones and you'd get out in the cold and them things would freeze solid after 2 hours.
Yeah.
Back when I was a kid.
Basically.
Yeah, so it was definitely cold. There's no doubt about that. So we had roughly 25 teams, I think, that finished the match.
I believe so, yeah.
25 and a half.
Yep.
Okay. Because we did have one gentleman, Justin, I believe it was.
Yeah, correct? Justin Brammer came out and shot by himself, so he got first place as an individual.
He beat a lot of the teams by himself.
He did, He shot really well.
Everybody had a ton of fun. I think I believe, and I'll want to let you guys answer this first, but who do you think traveled the furthest for that match? I'm going to say Gino.
Gino.
It's got to be Gino. Yep.
Yeah. Came all the way down from Wisconsin, picked up Art along the way, and come down and enjoyed it. And so, you know, this was that wasn't a cold match for him.
No.
That
was,
no, but he still bitched.
Yeah, he did complain about it. Yeah. But Doug, just kind of touch on a few things. So, number one, this was an outlaw match. It wasn't no affiliation with PRS, NRL 22, nothing like that. Outlaw match, and we still sold the match out, basically.
Right? Yeah, we sold it out at 80, but we had a lot of guys from Illinois sign up, and they got hammered with like 15 inches of snow and, you know, ice on top of that or underneath that, so all those guys backed out at the last minute.
Yeah.
They all kept on messaging me. We're trying.
Right.
But it just wasn't working out. So.
But you know, to have, and we had a couple teams that did not finish. Is that correct?
Had one team.
One team.
Yep.
Had to pull out early.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But to have that many people show up in January when it's that cold, and the road conditions were not great.
Nope.
Traveling down, there were some not so good spots, but to have that many people show up for a match that time of year in those weather conditions, I think says a lot.
So. I thought it was a success.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah, I definitely call that a success.
I mean, with just the support that we get at Gadsden is amazing. I mean, all the shooters are always very nice and always show up, and we try to make them have a good time.
So, yeah, absolutely. So before we really kind of get into some of the feedback, kind of the reason, the impetus for having this podcast was get some feedback from RO perspective, get feedback from MD perspective, and then we've got Reese joining us who shot the match, and she's going to give some feedback as well. So kind of hit it from all perspectives and see where maybe some of our observations kind of jive with what you saw as a shooter and then vice versa. And then maybe there were some things that maybe we saw that you didn't see that you don't necessarily agree with or whatever, but, you know, maybe we'll kind of go over some of that stuff. So the match format, so it was one position or four targets, or two positions, two targets, and then four positions, one target. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, so each stage was worth a total of 16 points for the team.
Right.
Yep.
Right. And then scoring two. You just want to talk about the scoring here real quick?
Yeah, so first round impacts were worth 2 points. And if you missed the first target, you got the opportunity to shoot it one more time for 1 point.
Yep.
But if you missed it the second time, you move to the next target.
Right.
So kind of do it as realistic as possible for like deer hunting and stuff like that. You know, you may get an opportunity to shoot an animal twice, but after two times, they're pretty much gone.
So, right.
So we loosely used kind of like the NRL 22 rules. NRL hunter rules.
Yep.
So
what?
Because a lot of our shooters, you know, shoot the NRL hunter series.
Yeah.
So this was a good train up for those guys for the upcoming season. So.
And that's definitely a growing trend in the shooting sports right now is that hunter style match.
It's catching on.
I mean, all the custom builders out there, you know, making rifles specific for that type of competition. So, you know, and that kind of brings up, you know, this was something when NRL Hunter was initially just a concept, right? You know, I remember us having a conversation, probably 3 years ago, saying that was going to be the next big thing.
Yeah.
And we all just kind of shook our heads.
All talked about it and yep. Tried to get it for an X match.
Yeah.
But that got shut down.
But we still...
I blame that on Doug, though.
we did do the Hunter match.
We did. Yeah, yeah. It counted for X points. But we wanted it the year before.
And that wasn't a team match either. That was
individual. Yep.
Yeah. Which that match went really well, too.
Yeah, it was smooth. That was our first one to put on, and we wasn't for sure how smooth or how fast it was going to go. And I think we had all the shooters done by 1 o'clock and on the road. So, and that was on a Sunday because that was the second day of the 2 day matches. So everyone was tickled to death, be able to get on the road and get out of town. So.
Yep. And no hangups on that one. Everything moved smooth. A little bit of hangups on the team one, but that's because everybody get BSing and won't have their stuff ready to go.
Hang around the burn barrel.
Oh yeah. Burn barrel.
What time were we done? 2:30?
I think 2:30. It was 2 o'clock. It was early afternoon.
Yep.
Yeah.
It wasn't bad.
No.
Being cold, it was.
Yeah, because
people don't move quite as quickly.
In Iberia by 3.
Having dinner.
And that was after the awards and everything. So I guess it was 1:30 to 2.
Yeah.
2:30 or 2.
Very well ran. So kind of getting back to the format and some of the rules. Just kind of go through, for those that don't know, that might be listening, you know, they hear the term hunter match, but just kind of go down through the basic rule set that we had.
Start out, every stage is blind. So that's completely different than what most all the shooters are used to. So there's a holding area, and the shooters are giving a stage description, as in, you know, one position, 4 targets, you know, description like that, and tells which targets they're shooting. But other than that, that's pretty much all the stage description will say. You know, it may say from the marked positions. So they don't know any of that till they get up to the holding area. They read the stage description, and then the RO will call their names and call them to the line. And I had a green stake. So once they, you know, because I was anticipating snow on the ground. So my first match, I painted lines on the ground. This time I figured they'd be covered up, so we put green stakes out. So then all the hunters would have to carry all their gear to the line. No one's allowed to look at the stages prior to it. And then once they cross the green stake, their time started. And being a team format, the one guy would start ranging the targets and trying to find the targets as the other shooter would start to get in position. And he would usually help out. And I mean, I don't know, how did you guys work your team, Reese? But most people would, after they found, if it was 4 targets, they would try to help and find the first 2 targets. And then the first shooter would start shooting as the spotter found the other 2 targets. So
yeah, that's kind of how we did it, unless we were really struggling. And then we both continued to look. But yeah, for the most part, I just helped find the first couple. And then I started shooting while Mitch found the rest.
And it sounded like most of the match, you were pretty much there just to help find the targets, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, your impacts wasn't working out too well that day, so.
Yeah, that reminds me, is Mitch's back better now? Has it healed up?
I will say my teammate did carry me throughout the whole match that day.
And who was your teammate?
Mitch Curran. He was a good sport through the whole thing, even though I was having a pretty rough day.
I don't know if Mitch listens to this or not, but that's the first time.
I'll give him a heads up.
That's the first time I'd seen him, and you know,
it's been a long time.
It's been a few years, you know. And I remember,
really good guy.
He was kind of in the OG club when we all kind of started, you know, the center fire stuff together. So it was really good to see him. And then just true to his nature, he's always jovial and always laughing and joking. That's why we all get along with him so well.
Center like the NRL Hunter match for a while now.
I don't know
and
if he's gonna.
We haven't had a chance to do it yet, but then this came up, and so we partnered up and got some practice in, and maybe we'll be at some of the NRL Hunter matches. We'll see if he ever wants to shoot with me again after this one.
Let him get through some couple sessions of therapy, and then he'll probably.
Yeah.
All right, so. Again, want to go over kind of some feedback from the ROs here, kind of kick it off, and then obviously, you know, you guys jump in at any point when you would like to. So my stage was stage one. It was called the trench. It was two targets in two positions. I had a buffalo and a bobcat. I think the buffalo was a 250.
256, I think.
256, and then the bobcat was 130, if I remember correctly. Position one behind the log with position two in front of the log. I don't know why, but I had to describe what was behind the log and in front of the log to so many squads. I thought it was kind of a gimme that here's this great big log, your first position, you need to be behind the log. The second position, you need to be in front of the log. And they were like, do I have to shoot off the log? I'm like, no, you don't have to shoot off the log. You know, can I shoot prone? If you want to, I don't give a shit. Shoot any way you want. Just shoot behind the log for your first two targets. Move in front of the log and then shoot it again.
I'd have been telling them all the good guys shoot offhand.
Shooting off of that swing log, though, you might as well be shooting offhand.
You can pin that log pretty good.
When I proofed the stages, I shot off the log.
Did you?
Yep.
Yeah.
And I thought it was just fine. So
I was kind of taken back at how many people would come up and just shoot. And you could tell their heart was racing, their blood was pumping, and you could just see that log rocking back and forth, and they were trying to time their shot as their reticle moved up and down the target.
So they would actually shot off the log, and then
right next to him, they'd have a tripod with a big old, you know, dinner plate sitting on top of it. Or they had a bipod. I'm like, why are you shooting off of a moving log? You know, go down to prone or, you know,
do at least shoot off the tripod. Yeah,
shoot off your tripod. Yeah. You brought it, right?
At least do a rear support.
And I had one, you know, the slit in the log.
Yeah.
I had one shooter literally tried to stuff his barrel in there. I'm like, there's just barely enough room just to get the barrel in there, let alone the gun.
Not for my AR.
Ain't going to work.
Now, see, Chad and BJ, they use that stage for their three-gun stage, and they make them
shoot.
We do.
We know. And they got nope, that won't work. Ah, crap. How much?
You got to cant that rifle.
It's more than cant. It's a true 90 degree. Yeah. Yeah. So you're reading your reticle. Yeah. You know,
you're doing all kinds of math in your head, and then you say, hell, I don't care. There it is.
That's the nice thing about three gun. It's it's just how much ammo can you carry with you?
But then we got a truck, so
So just you know, some things that I kind of picked up on my stage, and I think. Actually, this goes for all stages because some of this came from me. We did a couple of posts out on our Facebook page, got feedback from all the ROs that are out there. So we'll just kind of go down through this and we'll just kind of talk about these things. And obviously, you know, anything you guys think of, bring it up and let's talk about it. So kind of number one for me, range finding binoculars versus having a pair of binoculars with a separate range finder. Number one, ate a ton of time.
Yeah, we got a lot of them that have really good binos. Oh, yeah, there it is. And then they'd get on their spot. I ain't got no clue. You know, they'd have a little four-power handheld, you know.
Yeah, you get on your really nice Swaros, your 10, 12-power Swaros, and then you jump behind an old Nikon or something that looks like you're looking through the bottom of a Coke bottom bottle, and you can't find a target. And, there's a reason for that. So that was kind of the big one for me that I saw eight-time. Misjudging target distances, I saw a lot of issues with that. Those that had good range finding binos fared much, much better, right? You guys got anything you want to say on that?
It could definitely be done with a handheld. I think the first match, third place guy, I think he was using handheld. I think, was it Tom?
Yep.
His third, I think?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
There was first or second, I believe, at last match, they were using a handheld. So,
he was doing it over a scope, though.
Was he?
Yep. Yeah. He had, you know, he actually had a plan and was going with it.
So every stage, I ranged them with a handheld and range finding binos just to make sure that you could possibly do it with both. And I definitely had to move some targets because handhelds a lot of times are picking up the trees in front of it and all that. So I tried to get them in the open as much as you could in the woods or a big tree beside it where they could hit the tree. So
target visibility was on my stage. I could see where they struggled because that grayish white target right. with a snow background sitting on the side of a hill, which makes it blend in even more. Whereas if you're looking across an open field, you can kind of see that target sticking out, you know, away from everything else. But when it just washes into the background, I think that's why so many people on my stage had a hard time finding targets.
Yeah, the snow definitely helped hide the targets a little bit. They were already hidden.
So what do you think was the number one thing why people couldn't find targets?
Because they wasn't looking at the stakes. That's they, right. They'd hand be sticks. Offside.
Yep. Hand sticks for sure.
Yours,
what was you saying?
Well, I had a very, very tight shooting lane. So easily, you know, go to your shooting mark, look at your yellow and blue. They're well on. I mean, they're looking 180 degrees.
So they weren't standing behind the sighting stake.
When all they had to do was pan about 10 degrees. That's all they had. So I had teams, I mean, we're up to 4 minutes into the time and they're still not finding the target and not even looking close to where the pan sticks are. So right. A lot of time lost there. Look at your sticks.
Yeah. And yours, if you was off just to the left, or the pan stick. Right. Yeah, you couldn't see it because when we were setting up, I was off maybe a foot to the left. And he says, where are your stakes?
There it is. Go to your firing point. Go to your spots where you're going to fire from and look at pan sticks and stay in that.
Yeah.
Well, like mine was 4 foot. The firing position was 4 foot left of the pan stick.
But it's still going to be within those pan sticks.
No, it wouldn't.
So if no one's done a hunter match, so you had a sighting stick that I had painted orange. And every target, you know, was within they had a left limit and a right limit. So if you drew a cone from the sighting stick to your left limit to your right limit, the targets are within that. And like NRL puts a backer by their first target. Well, I didn't put a backer by them, but I drew a line pretty much straight from the orange sighting stick to the left limit. Your first target is going to be on that left line. And then the other ones are just within those limits. So there was so many people that the shooting position wasn't always right at the sighting stick. So you had to remember those angles. And that's, like Jason, yours was a prime example. I mean, don't think I didn't do that on purpose. I mean, I put the sighting stick all the way to the left side of the log. Well, they wanted to always go up and stand in the middle of the log, mm-hmm. you know, and if you're, you know, it's all about angles. If you move a foot or two to the right or left, your angles are completely different than where the targets are at.
Yes. Or like on my stage, if you got just a little bit to the left of the sighting stick, you could see up that lane, but there was a tree
branch, right there.
I mean, you literally moved from your sighting stick maybe 2 feet to the left.
And it changed your, because that's about how far out.
Totally changes your field of view. Yeah. And guys are standing there using the brace
right.
to hold, you know, to stabilize themselves.
Versus their tripod they carried with them.
There's a couple of them, and I'm trying to remember who it was. One guy was down behind the rifle already. He was helping sight, right? And he goes, the buffalo's right there at the end of that lane. He's like, I'm looking up there, and it's not there. And I'm standing back behind him going, yeah, it's because there's a tree branch in your way, dummy.
I was watching you on that stage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, it's right there. It's right there in front of you.
I don't see it.
Yeah, that was super important because, like, there was definitely – I don't know if it happened to me on this hunter match, the past one, but the very first one that we did, that definitely happened to me.
Got no excuses. You know how your dad thinks. That's what I do. I walk up to the stage,
but
think what Doug would do. How can I screw everybody? Okay, here we go. There it is.
So this past one, I learned my lesson, but the first one, I think it was the boat, actually. I was in the boat. Well, that sighting stick is off to the left of the boat, and that completely threw off the angles. And there was actually a target that I didn't even wind up finding because I'm like, or I did find it, but it took me a while because I'm over here looking all the way to the left and really I needed to be looking more right because right. those angles were
Could you see all the targets
off.
If you just put your game changer on top of the sighting stick and looked out?
Yes.
So you just gave it away.
All of them except for your stage. You would have been down too low. If you're staying above it, the pig, I believe. I think it was the pig. There was one of them. There was some brush there.
Yeah.
You could, and people was like, oh, the only place you can see all the targets is from the stake. No, you could see every target from the stake. You could see every target from the shooting position, you know?
Yeah.
So a place for the RO.
Yeah, exactly.
So designing, trying to get targets where you can see them all from three different positions, kind of challenging sometimes.
You really got to use the stakes, your limits and your ranging. Those are your best friend when it comes to the stages. Because absolutely. If you aren't, and you have to use all three of them because they all are going to help you. If you don't use those, then I think you would struggle quite a bit if you don't aren't using them.
And that's
sticks.
Not just this match. Reese and I've range, RO'd for some centerfire matches. Mm-hmm. And they do the same on the NL Hunter, and they do the same thing. It's like they'll be panning way outside the limits, and it's like, it's right there. Yeah. So use those stakes. They're your friends.
Second thing, communication. One, just general communication between the teammates. And two, so many of them did not have a game plan. When I would yell out, your time begins now, as they're coming to the line, they're going, you going to pan and I'll shoot first? Or who?
Just killing me.
You guys have been standing at the burn barrel for 10 minutes. You know what the stage is. Come up to the line and not even have any idea what you're going to do.
Don't have an idea who's going to shoot first. Don't know what the targets are. Oh, I don't know. There's something out there. What are you shooting at? Something over there in that clearing. What are you shooting at? Well, the other ROs should have went to them. What are you shooting at? I don't even know what we're shooting at on this stage. The options are, it's got four legs. They all got four legs.
Yeah, communication is super important because if you aren't communicating with your partner, then you could be looking at a completely different target than your partner if you aren't.
Oh, I saw a lot of that.
Making sure you're talking all the time. If you want to see some good communication, you should watch some videos of Dave Odom and Caleb Gitcomb when they shoot.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
The NRL Hunter matches. They are so good at communicating.
They did.
They did. James did freaking awesome too.
Yeah, James. Yes. They were greased.
Yes,
You watch.
Yeah.
The top teams all did the same thing every single time.
Yes.
They had good communication. Yeah, they were like a sniper team.
Yes.
Bam, bam, bam. No unnecessary talk.
Yep.
But they were communicating back and forth. They were given directions. They were given all the pertinent data.
Yep.
And they weren't.
The same shooter.
And they didn't get flustered.
Yep. Same shooter shot first each time. They communicated as in, I don't know if all of them did this, but what I saw, it wasn't, hey, the target over by the big tree, it was the target at 11 o'clock. Your first target's a deer, 11 o'clock deer. Yeah. Versus just, over there in that, by that big tree. That well, there's tree. a lot of trees.
Yeah, that's that was one
just
thing
down
that's
just down from the horizon. Just down from the horizon.
That's important, trying to just know how you're going to describe where targets are. Because
and time management.
Yeah.
Yep.
That was the other biggie.
When are you going to give up and start shooting versus keep on looking?
Yes. So.
And a lot of them would ask, I figured this out pretty quick. A lot of them would keep asking for time, and I would tell it to them. And they were making that decision to stop looking for targets and start shooting at 4 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, well, that ain't going to work.
Right.
You don't have
the first shooter hadn't shot by 3 minutes.
And you still haven't even found all your targets. So not only are you not going to be shooting at targets you haven't found yet, you don't even have enough time to shoot the one that you do have, that you have found. And that's where I really started to see teams just fall apart. Stop looking for targets at least 3 minutes. The guys that were doing good, they had targets spotted in 90 seconds, maybe 2 minutes. But 90 seconds, they knew exactly what they were doing. The one on my stage, Kyle Edwards and Clint Munslinger, communication was awesome.
Yeah.
They finished that stage, don't hold me to this, because I think 4:30, 4 minutes, 30 seconds.
They shot good.
They were cleaned up walking off of my stage. I walked away from my timer, and I just told them, I said, I haven't seen a squad do anything even remotely close to what you guys just did. They were cleaned up walking off stage, and my timer went off.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
They were on their game.
And they didn't clean the stage. I had no cleans. But I want to say they had like a 12 or 14. I don't remember their score, but it was good. Misses were just wind.
I heard that about their time too, from a couple different ROs too, that they were just, really got into the stage.
Yeah, they had over a minute left on mine.
Yeah.
Found him shot and was walking off already before their timer even went off on several stages, is from what I heard. That's awesome.
That's awesome.
I watched one stage with Dave and James. I think he had 45 seconds left, and he hadn't even got into position yet, and laid down with probably 30 seconds and just bam, 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 bam.
Imagine that from Dave. Yeah.
Just to hear him communicate with James was just awesome.
Yeah. It was back and forth. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't one way. James was finding them before.
Oh, James was finding targets better than Dave was finding targets.
Oh, yeah.
Watching them shoot was really cool.
Like, yeah.
That kid's going to run past his old man any day now.
It was fun to watch.
He's such a good sport.
And just a nice, polite kid.
Yeah, super nice. Yeah.
That whole family's nice. It's fun going to matches with him. We had a great time when we went to national finals a few years ago, mm-hmm. all of us, and he was on our team. Man, we had an absolute blast down there. So, Deej, you want to kind of go over your stage, kind of give a description and some things maybe you picked up on?
I had the mini tower. You had four targets. You shot from basically a rolling staircase. The cider stick was off to the right, so you had to have your spotter doing their work. It was a coyote, which was pretty easy to see in my mind.
It was
evidently not in everybody's mind.
Because they weren't
following the sticks. Yeah.
Because it was way off to its on the left.
Yep. And the other three had clear lanes, and it drew your eye right into them. A pig, a deer, and a prairie dog. The coyote gave people problems. And even if they found it, there was some low-hanging branches in front of it, and I don't know how many times the dirt 2 foot in front of that got hit, but it was a lot. They just didn't get an accurate measurement on it, which happened.
Yeah, that one was sitting on a berm.
It was sitting on the right side of a berm,
It was white and wide open.
And I don't know how many guys were looking, that big berm just to the left of there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, I'm looking at it. I can't see it. Wrong berm. Yep. Oh, my God. It was funny. The biggest thing, the coyote screwed a lot of people over, not knowing what they were shooting at. Because if they weren't going in order, they had to tell me what they were shooting at. And I guess that not all the ROs were doing that. They were being nicer than I was. You'd think you'd have that wrote down on your armband. But a lot of people didn't have an armband. And a lot of people weren't writing anything down.
Yeah.
Yeah, my wrist coach, I loved using that. Like, I print out all my dope on, like, an index card.
Yeah.
Well, I make, like, a little, like, graph on Google Docs, and I just put all my dope in, and then I print it out, and I highlight, like, all my dope yellow, and then I look at what the wind's supposed to be, and I normally do a low side and then a really high side.
Yeah.
So, and then I highlight both of those green, and then I laminate it, and I have that and a dope card to write on my wristband, and that works really good for me.
Do a 5 mile an hour wind?
No.
Oh.
I
do a 5 mile an hour wind, and if it's two, I'll go half. If it's 10, we'll go double. And if it's more than that, watch this.
On that, I don't remember who it was, but somebody had a wrist coach on.
Mm-hmm.
It was a larger one. It had a really large window on it. And I forgot to ask him after the stage, but what I could gather what he was doing while I was watching him is he had all of his dope, like you were talking, mm-hmm. on a laminated card. And when his partner would call out the distance, he would circle it. And then when the stage
with a grease pencil or something,
then he just wipes it off and he goes,
that's what I do.
So he could go, 125, 275, right? He could just look down. So I guess as long as you remembered the order and you didn't get them mixed up.
I would write them down on, if I was doing it, it's the way I do a normal stage. I write down in order on my wristband.
Yeah, that's how I did it. So that's what I had that extra dope card on, the blank one on there for. And just every time that they would or my partner would say a yardage, I would just write it down on that other.
So you didn't figure it out to the yard? You went.
Huh? What do you do yours in 5 or 10 yard increments?
Mine's all 5.
5?
Yep.
I would probably do 10 yard out to 100, and then I'd probably start chopping it.
So who's going to hold your armband so you can read it?
You.
Okay. Now we know.
I mean, what? Why else do I take you to matches?
That's about it.
Carry all my
gear. Carry the gear and tell you what to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Amy, you had the stage 7 good times. Why don't you go over your stage here real quick?
Mine was 4 positions, 1 target. It was 130-ish yards. I wasn't told exactly, but I was guessing.
It was right at 130.
So the biggest time loss on mine was people panning way beyond what they needed to, not paying attention to the yellow and blue.
Going outside the stakes, you mean?
Yeah, going way outside the stakes.
Yeah.
Second time suck was probably not seeing their impacts, but all they had to do was look down the shooting lane because it snowed most of the day.
Yeah.
Look at where that snow was flying.
Yeah.
Because the front of my target on that tree was just ate up.
Yeah.
The tree ate some of my bulls, that's for sure.
All you had to do was look at where that snow was going. And a couple, you know, a couple teams finally figured that they're like, oh, there it is.
Yeah. Who was the only team that cleaned your stage?
Art and Gino.
Oh.
Right? That was the only stage that they really...
The only good stage they had all day.
I'm trying to think another time suck. Since it was such a small area for the stage, the like gear overloaded. Like you're not going to fit 2 tripods in that area and share a bag and, you know, tripping over each other's crap. And there was way too much stuff in too small of area.
Yeah, on my stage, somebody was trying to set up a rear support tripod on the steps.
Yeah.
Well, that ain't going to work. There it goes flying.
Yeah.
Hand sticks, wind, and too much crap.
I saw a lot of that, too. A lot of gear that did not need to be had. Yep. Just stuff that was in the way. And then yell out for something, and then guys over unbuckling 90 straps on his backpack trying to dig for it. And you're just watching that clock just being eat away. So, you know, one other thing that I noticed, there was a couple of impacts out there, a couple of vortex impacts. Essentially a $2,000 brick for most of the people out there because they didn't know how to use them. So
they were brand new. They were trying to figure it out on the clock.
Brand spanking new.
We have a picture of Zane reading the manual.
And Zane did the best with it out of everybody I had out there.
Because he actually read the manual.
Yeah. But Buzz was having, I don't think he was believing it so much.
What's that?
But Buzz was not believing his. When he did get to use it.
His rangefinder email.
Yeah.
I got you. But yeah, a lot of gear that didn't need to be had. Yeah, the rangefinders, knowing how, and I'm not just singling out the rangefinders, but know how to use your gear, know how to use your reticle. Know what your dope is.
When it's 6 degrees. Zero.
Right. Yeah, that's a biggie.
Somebody came up to me right before the match started and said, I've got dope for 50-degree weather. What do you suggest? And I said, good luck. you know, the match is starting in 5 minutes, and you're asking me about a 50-degree change in your dope for your gun. I'm like, dude, we got to get going.
A lot of rifles that were having issues.
Right.
Yeah.
Mine.
Reese?
What kind of rifle do you shoot?
A Remex.
I think she's going to be shooting CZ now.
I've never heard of a Remex having any issues at all.
I love my Remex.
Did you have your little pickle tool with you?
That wasn't the issue, actually. My bolt had not been cleaned, I don't think, and the gunk in there got all frozen up, and it was causing some white strikes. Yeah. So I didn't fire around for the first 2 stages.
Yep.
And then finally, I stuck my bolt in with some hot hands and got it all warmed up, and we actually took my bolt apart and attempted to clean it out a little from what we could, and that helped a little bit, but there was a lot of, well, like I said, the first 2 stages, I didn't fire around out of my gun.
You had problems on my stage with light strikes.
Yeah. It was all day long, off and on. No questions.
Pretty much.
There was a lot of rifles that had issues. Not just Remex.
No, because yours was the first Remex that I saw that had problems that day. Yeah. There was another brand that was having problems.
Which one was that?
Voodoo.
Voodoos.
Yeah, it seemed to be a theme there for a while.
I know Bryce started out with some issues with his.
I saw a lot of bolts being held over fires, over the burn barrels, which seemed to fix a lot of the problems.
Yeah, it did.
I think they just had too much lube inside of them, and then it gets cold.
And that's where we messed up. I mean, we wiped all the lube off on the outside and all that, but didn't take the firing pin out and all that stuff. So yeah. there was obviously something in there.
Yeah, never, the only one I had
never trouble. Lubed it before, but yeah. Obviously some had got in there over the.
Well, I mean, I don't know when I actually took my bolt apart and cleaned it, like last all the way apart and cleaned everything. So, I mean, there's.
So you was just irresponsible. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, but so the first two stages I had.
So it's a female thing.
Yeah, the first two stages was really rough, but then after that, when I started warming my bolt up, I mean, I had at least one or two every single stage, but it got all, I mean, I figured it out. It worked out in the long run.
Yeah.
It was just the cold, which happens in the cold. So, I mean, that's what happens to matches in single digits.
Rimfire is definitely more picky when it gets that cold. Once you start dropping below freezing.
I remember as a kid, you know, with the single shot, carry it with the bolt cocked up so you could get it to go off when you was rabbit hunting or squirrel hunting or whatever when it got cold.
Some of the lubes that people use tend to get gummed up. The ammo freezes, you know, the wax builds up inside.
Yeah, I think wiping that off before, I think that helps a lot. I mean, I do that a lot in the cold.
And with misfires, still striking the primer, but just doesn't have enough energy behind it.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't take that much to slow that firing pin spring down and really...
Some of them ain't very overpowered anyway, so you can get that lighter trigger and all that stuff, and then they don't.
Yeah, we saw some faults with rifles. We are back now. Just kind of pick up where we left off. I was asking Doug kind of his perspective on the match. You got to float around all day, went around, helped the ROs, relieve some of us so we could kind of get warmed up. But kind of what did you see during the day from your perspective?
I just you saw everybody super nervous at the beginning of the match because a lot of times it was their first match ever shooting this style.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you don't know what you don't know. So everyone was nervous and didn't know what to expect on that first stage. And then after a couple stages in, everyone's laughing and smiling and having a good time. And I didn't see anybody. There was one team that left because they were cold. But other than that, everyone was having a good time. And laughing and cutting up. And they just, everyone I heard loved the style of the match. So wanting us to put on more hunter matches and stuff like that. So, they get their teamwork figured out later on in the day. And
definitely a learning experience.
Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. Reese and I shot a hunter match together. She was about to kill me after the first stage because I was like, I don't know how to do the tripod.
He was so nervous. I think he changed the height of the tripod probably 7 times before we even started the stage. Like, I think we still had 2 shooters, like 2 teams in front of us before it was even us. And I think he had changed the tripod height like 7 times.
Well, you didn't have to have all your stuff deployed on the clock, you know,
had to carry it up.
You just had to carry it up, right? Yep. So,
yeah.
Just leave it, please. Yeah. I think I was ready to find a new partner by the time before we even started the match.
So with that being said, that match that we shot was Kirk Burkhead's up in northern Missouri. He's going to be putting one on here shortly, so start following Muddy Creek because he's going to do a hunter match coming up here in the next month or so, I believe.
Yeah,
so.
He's giving me shit. You want to actually shoot a match for once?
So if you guys want another match coming up, that's going to be one to hit.
Kirk's are always fun.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah.
Challenging.
His matches are great. I love them. That was actually the first hunter match I had ever shot.
His are Outlaw series too, right?
Correct, yes. Yep. They're a little bit different, but same format.
Do you know when that next match is?
I don't think he's set a date yet.
Okay.
But I'd venture to say it's going to be before March.
We'll get with him and make sure that we announce that on the next one.
Absolutely.
We'll start doing more of that, you know, announcing some of these upcoming matches. So
if we like them, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we like Kirk.
We like Kirk, yeah, but, he's, you know, he's the ones guy. That we don't like.
He's good people. He's good people.
He is.
Absolutely.
So
he said it was a little bit different being behind the rifle instead of, you know, running the match.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he says beforehand was one story. After the match, it was a different story.
Yeah. I watched him and Cheese shoot one stage, and they got done. They didn't find one of the targets till towards the end. I was like, hey, look at your sighting sticks there. And he's like, oh, yeah, I know. Because it just all kind of went out of the window when the beeper went off.
That is so true, though. It's like you can have the best plan, and then the second you hear that time begins now, everything just leaves your mind.
Yeah. That and the timing issue, because you're ROing, you're spotting, you're keeping score. Well, they're up there. They're on the rifle. How much time? Which do you want me to do? Give you time or do you want me to spot? Which one do you want me to do? And they have no clue. And you tell them, you know, the geese?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you tell them, you know, you got 1 minute remaining. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you got, you know, 5 seconds of panic, and then they get back into it. And, yeah.
Talking about the frantic, it's funny. There's a video out there somewhere. I don't know where it's at, but it's Dave and Caleb are shooting, and I think Caleb was shooting, and he goes, how much time do I have left? And Dave goes, or he's like all frantic, like, how much time? And Dave's like, 3 seconds. And like the calmest voice you can. I would be like, freaking out, 3 seconds, go.
Oh, no, I've seen that one too. Yeah, but that would be Dave.
Yeah.
And Dave's like, I don't know what you're freaking out about. You got time for 2 more shots.
Yeah.
And dial.
Yeah.
Exactly. Anything else that you want
to bring up? Yeah. So, gear-wise, the top team, one of the guys was shooting a Ruger Precision. So you can come out with a budget rifle, and those guys just showed that you can kick everybody's butt. It's all about, you know, communication, knowing your gear, knowing your correct dope, and all that. So don't let gear hold you back coming out to a match.
No, you don't need the best of the best.
I saw 2x4s. You know, screwed to the top of tripods, you know, for gamer plates. Yep. I mean, you got a support bag, a tripod, pair of binos, and a rangefinder. That's all you need.
They show up
with a whole backpack full of stuff, but that's all you needed.
Right? Yep. So, and ammo.
And ammo, yeah. And your dope and dope cards and all that kind of stuff. But you don't need 4 or 5 pump pillows and, that kind of stuff.
Especially for these hunter matches, you really... Like, I think Amy or someone was saying about the tight spaces. Like, you really don't even have room for all that. No. You don't
share gear.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw one guy had 3 game changers. You know, they had a standard size, then the schmedium, and then a mini. And I'm thinking, what are you going to do with all 3 of them? Oh, these things are heavy. No crap. Yeah. What are you going to do with 3 of them? Yeah. I don't know.
Especially those sand filled. Some of them can get really heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think it's worth it, though? Having the sand filled versus the light fill?
Oh, I love the sand. I do 100%. Yes. Yeah. 100% the sand, but it does get heavy. Yeah.
Yeah, Amy's got one really with the light fill, and I never can feel like I'm stable on it.
Yeah,
the only thing I think, what is our bigger one? It has like the beads in it.
The OG has beads in it, yeah.
But the only thing I really use that for is rear support when I'm going prone, because I like the bigger bag, so I have more of the.
But you don't carry it for the hunter match?
But no.
Right.
I do like the sand.
So a lot of pint size.
I just use pint size, sand fill, and that pretty much gets me through on anything. Like I said, I do like to use the OG for prone, but other than that.
I'll say that SkyPod came in handy for a few people.
I think that would come in very handy.
Now, I'm still not ready to drop $700
but
on a bipod.
If you got a tripod set up for it.
Well, I'll tell you what. We'll buy one. We'll go together and we'll do sharing, all right?
I'm good with that.
All right.
But if you got a tripod set up for your rifle, you know, like you do the prairie shooting and all that stuff, I don't see where the SkyPod's doing you all that much.
Well, they're pretty awesome.
But if I'm going to have a bipod, that'd be the one I'd want to have.
I mean, there's a lot of times they'll throw that SkyPod, deploy it, and then use, you know, just set it completely in front of a log. And use the back of the gun.
And
log on the.
I can see that.
Prone at that point. Yeah, I mean it's just really solid.
You watch those guys that know how to use them, and it's pretty amazing. Where a lot of times, if you're on a downhill slope, you guys will have to, you know, deploy their tripod and all those guys, and those guys will just deploy their bipod and lay down, shoot it prone. So,
you know, one of the other things I asked a couple of the shooters was. I think his rifle was 38 pounds or something like that. I don't know. It's not that heavy, but
it was heavy.
Yeah, one of the things he and I think we were talking about when we went to dinner afterwards was, did you like lugging around that truck axle all day long? He goes, no. He goes, I'm already thinking about what I'm going to do for, you know, this kind of match. So kind of general consensus was you really didn't need a big heavy match rifle.
You didn't need the PRS match rifle.
I think something in that maybe 12 to 14 pound range somewhere, maybe a little bit lighter, but I wouldn't go much lighter. Still, at the same time, I wouldn't want to carry around my
20. Yeah, that's why I was wanting my Bregera to work in the cold so bad. But
with that Ultradyne chassis.
With that Ultradyne chassis.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of these hunter matches
10 pounds.
Are set up like you're hunting. You aren't going to carry a 30-pound rifle and with a whole backpack filled of everything with you. I mean, if you're going on a long hiking hunt, I mean, you aren't gonna carry all of that stuff with you. And that's... These matches are set up to mimic hunting, so...
Well, doesn't the NRL Hunter Series, they've got weight
limits, yeah, for different...
Yeah.
A lot of people have built those light rifles to run in those lighter
That. So that would be definitely something else that I would consider, you know, if I was going to start shooting these, which... Maybe one of these days, Doug will let us shoot a match.
We just won't answer any calls or messages from Doug, and we'll be able to shoot. So, we're already signed up, Doug. Sorry.
So for those listening, Doug literally announces the match, and I swear it wasn't 10 minutes. I get a text. Hey, can you RO the match? I guess I'm going to RO the match.
Something like that.
I think I got asked before the match got announced.
Yeah. No, it's all good. It's all good. But that would be
Again, nobody shows up for the RO match.
Oh, somebody showed up.
Yeah, we did have one person, didn't we?
We had one person show up. They won.
Did you got first place?
I got first place.
Yep. I mean, we're trying to get my SkyPod.
What's that?
Participation trophy.
So I can get my SkyPod. Said I was at work so I can get my SkyPod.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's what it was about.
On the topic of ROs, I mean, they help matches that run so much better, and having good ROs is just a game changer. I mean, for a match, I know Dad as a match director is so appreciative of all the ROs he gets. And I mean, it just really helps him out. So he's not having to, I mean, he has the time to go around and make sure all the stages are running smoothly and doesn't have to stay at one stage. So the ROs really help the match flow.
Yeah. Eli coming out at the last minute to fill in that one spot.
Yeah,
that was huge.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, so many people came together to make this match a success. You know, obviously all the help you had, and you know,
absolutely.
Chad, BJ,
Julie,
and you know, the lunch.
Yes,
let's talk about
Cochran,
lunch.
Yes.
Who else gets a big old bowl of chili with Fritos and
Frito pie?
Oh my God!
Yes, thank you, and she kept
coming back like every 20 minutes. You want another bowl? I'm like, I'm full. I got a job to do.
She came back 3 times, but I was backed up. After this one. You just come to the cabin and get some, she says. All right.
Yeah, and serve chili after the match, too, if you were in the...
Yeah, we do a really good job down there treating our shooters good when they come down.
Sure.
You got a place to stay if you want to. You got the clubhouse. So, you know, we'll get
we
got the new,
yeah,
we got the new house now also. And, gosh, how many does that sleep? I think 16 people or so, I think.
Yeah.
Sleep in there.
I think that's what BJ said.
Yeah.
And they're full size. I mean, queen bunk beds.
Yeah,
too.
Nice,
they're
good
really
mattresses.
Nice.
Yeah.
So
we've got plenty of accommodations. We got our RV hookups down there.
I think we got 15,
sewer water.
15 RV hookups.
Yeah.
Yep.
Primitive camping if you want to do that. So we'll talk more about Gaston as a shooting center. You know, another podcast, a little bit more in detail. I think it'd be a good idea to bring. We'll get Chad on here. Kind of go over that, all the matches that happened there throughout the year, and just all the events and where he's going to take that range and how much, Jesus Christ, how much it's grown since he opened that place. But we will definitely get into that in more detail on another podcast.
Some new stuff going in out there all the time.
Asked a lot of squads when they came through, just asked some general questions to them. You know, did you have fun? Response from every one of them was, hell yes. You know, this is an absolute blast.
Heard a lot of people saying, you know, this is my new hobby now. This is what I'm going for, is hunter matches.
And I had a lot of them. Oh, yeah, first time. I'm going to be back.
Even in the cold, they were having a blast.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm really hoping to see a lot more of the 22 hunters, too. I mean, I know there's a handful out there, but I really hope that grows, too, a lot. I know there's the actual series for the center fire, but I really hope the 22 hunter grows, too.
And it is, I wouldn't say it's easier. but it's easier to put on a rimfire hunter match.
Absolutely.
Because you don't need, you only need 1,000 yards.
You only need 300 yards or so, you know. And
you only need that for one or two stages.
Yeah, I mean, all of our targets averaged within 160 yards, you know, for the most part. 150,
yeah,
right around there. So everything was pretty much within that. And then we obviously had two or three targets that was out past that, but.
Yeah, Logan's stage, everybody was real happy about the one target.
So I've got I've got a picture for that. It was a bird target. And if you we're gonna post that, make a post about that so you guys can see what we're talking about. But I think there's only four targets or four impacts on that target. And if you draw a straight line on those cider stakes, it's a big wide open area right there. Was Logan was on the open range, right?
Yep.
And then Jake Dobbins had one too. We had a fox in the hole. Yeah, we had I was sitting there. It was a close range stage, so I think the max I had a squirrel out on, I think 112 yards, but all the other targets were within 90 yards. And I'm sitting there on this ravine, and I'm like, how can I make this challenging and something different? And I'm looking in this foxhole, and I was like, man, I wish this hole was on the other side of this ravine, you know, facing towards the shooters. And I look to my left, and I see this 12-foot log that was all hollowed out. And I was like, all right, here we go. So I'm out there dragging this log. And so I drug it out, and I put that coyote or that fox target inside of the log.
Yeah.
So, there's a lot of it. It's only at 50 yards. There's a lot of impacts on it, but a lot of people looked over the top of it too.
Just real quick, the decoy target.
Oh, yeah.
That was funny.
You had the decoy on your
stage. I had the decoy. Yeah. Oh, my God. So many people walk up. There it is. I'm like, make sure what it is.
It was on the stage next to yours, but they could see it from yours.
Right. Yeah. And so, everybody wanted to shoot that damn thing.
So I can't
Gino and
I can't
Art,
take
they
credit
definitely
for that.
Shot it.
That was out of Jim C's book there.
Oh, yeah.
That was walking them up before they got to the green peg. I'm like, make sure it's a coyote.
So Jim C had a stage at one of his matches, and it said trophy whitetail buck, and then put a full-size doe target out there. And a lot of people shot that. So I was like, all right, we're going to do stage called a couple of bucks. So I had two bucks out there, and the RO would specifically ask you, you know, do you know what you're shooting? Yeah, shooting a whitetail buck. It's like, okay. It's like, what's your second target? Whitetail buck. They get up there, and I had I took copy paper and printed out a doe target, full color. You know, all the targets were painted gray, but this one was full color, and then
it was very realistic.
Laminated on some corrugated plastic, and set it out there. And I think I had 13 shots.
That was awesome.
on that doe target.
It was funny because I was walking up to the stage, and kind of when you walked up, it was pretty obvious there was two lanes, you know, that a target could possibly be down. And
that was a 2x2.
Yep, it was two targets, and so I was like, okay, most likely there's probably going to be one down this lane and one down the other lane. So as I'm getting down, the first lane was straight out in front of you. So I get down and I'm looking and I'm like, okay, so I got two targets, but one of them looks weird. So then I started scanning and I found the other one. And I was like, okay, it's definitely not that one. But I was so confused because I was like, first of all, how is this all painted like that? And then if you could see...
Doug was up all night. We didn't have my hand, yeah.
You could see, like, the holes in it. And I was like, that is not steel. What is that? I was like, I have never seen a target like this.
That
and
didn't then, deter Art, though.
No.
But it definitely threw me off.
I sent all four shots at it.
Yep.
Even though I knew that was... Or I didn't know that... Never seen a target like that. It still got me, that's for sure. I didn't shoot it, but.
That was very funny. Yeah.
Very funny.
I think, didn't you give the target to Gino or Art?
Oh, yeah, because they sent, both of them sent both of their shots at that target. So they had four impacts on that.
Yeah.
Four out
but
of 13.
But Art was very proud about how close his were together.
He
had a hell of a nice group.
He said it was a
nice
darn good group. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Hey, you can't blame any of his misses on the gun then. He knew it was shooting good.
That's absolutely right. Reese, anything from your perspective you want to bring up?
I mean, it was a really fun match. I definitely want to start shooting more of the hunter matches. I think it's really just cool, different perspective on a match, you know, just or a different type of match, something that not everyone shoots all the time. I don't know. I think it's really fun.
Yeah.
I think it's cool that also there's the option, like, you know, of team or no team. At a lot of matches, some you don't have the option. It's only one or the other. But
yeah,
I really like that there's different styles within this same, you know, hunter yeah. style. I had a blast. There wasn't, except for my bolt.
Yeah. You think it's less pressure than an NRLX or a PRS rimfire match?
Yeah, kind of. I don't know.
It seemed a lot more laid back.
That's what I got. Everyone was all worked up at first because they didn't know what to expect. But then once they shot their first stage, they're like, this is awesome.
See, and that's where I shine, because I never have a clue.
Right. Yeah.
I'm halfway through the stage. Oh, yeah, that's what we're going to do. Yeah.
It is more laid back.
It seemed a lot more jovial and laid back.
Fun.
Yeah.
Fun.
Yeah. And you just kind of, you just go up and shoot, and then you walk. And normally you have at least a minute or something to, you know, reload your mags and get ready at the next staging area. And it's always fun the next, if there's most of the time, I mean, not for long, probably just a minute or two, you're with another shooter at the staging area, and it's always fun to talk about the last stage. You guys, well, did you find it? Well, I didn't find it. Where was it? So it's always fun talking about the stages afterwards, you know, with the shooters at the next staging area.
You know, what was kind of fun was usually when you're doing PRS, NRL 22, whatever, you kind of know who your top five shooters are going to be.
Uh-huh.
With the way that these teams were going through, you didn't have a clue who was going to end up. So that was kind of a nice change of pace, it being the norm up on the top.
And I think it's really cool. I mean, nobody has any idea of what to expect when you're walking up to something. So, I mean, it's just completely, everyone's in the same boat. You have no idea. It's not like, oh, well, they practice the PRS barricade all the time or anything. You know, you have no idea what to expect, and there's no way to practice it or anything. It's just it's on the clock. You got to figure it out then, so.
Practice is your teamwork.
Yeah. Yes.
No, yeah, I agree.
You practice your communication.
Communication. Yeah, the basic positions are always the basic positions.
Yep.
Probably helps if you're bow shooting Mill, I'm guessing, instead of like Gino and Art.
Gino and Art get mentioned a lot here because, yeah. They were my first ones to come to my stage.
That sounds like something we would do.
Oh, yeah.
I'll shoot MOA, you shoot
MOA. Well, we'd do it we'd do it because.
On purpose. I also think, like, the adrenaline of just, like, you may have a plan of what you think is going to work when you go up there, but you could get up there and it could be a completely different scenario than what you thought or what you wanted to do. There's a lot of situations you don't get to do what you want to do. You just got to go with what's there because... And you might not always be in the most comfortable position, you know, trying to get as close to that stake as you can or anything. So
I don't know why anyone would put you in an uncomfortable position.
Oh, yeah. I have no idea who would do that. No idea at all.
Should I trim this tree branch? It's going to be hitting them right in the back of the head.
Nah, leave it.
I remember one match I was at. I don't remember. I think it was maybe Nationals that Chaz put on.
It was Chaz.
And there was like a rock somewhere at the banquet. He goes, and for anybody that was complaining about that rock, you know, that was stabbing you right in the stomach or whatever, yeah, that was there on purpose. I put that there. I was like, of course you did.
That was on that long stage where you had to shoot across.
Yeah, his briefing said, you know, do not move anything, you know, on the stage prior to the stage. If you shooting or whatever, grass, rocks, all that, that's put there for a reason.
And Dad does the same thing.
Hey, you learn from the good guys.
So I think probably what a lot of people who listen to this are going to want to know is, when's the next one?
Next hunter match? Don't have anything on the book. Kirk Burkhead's match.
Kirk's
That'll be
match.
The next one.
The next match at Gadsden?
Let's February 24th will be the center fire match. And then the PRS rimfire match will be the next day on February 25th.
Do you see how he's avoiding the question?
Oh, yeah, I know.
He's completely, sounds like a politician
like
more and more every day.
Let's do it when it's warm.
So yeah. I have been asked to put another one on when it's warm. Nothing's on the books for a hunter match yet.
I love that October time frame. Yeah. I really do. that late October when the leaves are turning, you can hide the targets. Oh,
right.
Really, really well.
In the yellow and orange.
In the leaves and so all the colors.
Speaking of October, we may have a big match in October.
Yeah, we got one more thing we want to touch on here real quick. Those that are not aware yet, Gadsden and Doug Bowes will be hosting the PRS Rimfire finale to close out the season. Yeah, you want to talk about that here real quick before we close things up?
I'm excited, fired up. Other than that, we're just starting to start working on everything, starting to look for sponsorship and donations and stuff like that. So if anybody could help us out on any of that or would like to help out, reach out to me. My email address is bowsdoug@yahoo.com. You know how to reach me through Facebook and and Messenger.
Absolutely. Yep. If you own a company or work for a company that may be interested in sponsoring the match, reach out to Doug through any of the channels that he mentioned, and he'll get you squared away.
Especially if you're a Missouri company, because right in your back door, smack dab in the middle of Missouri.
I bet you we'll have probably 250 shooters or so. It ought to be a good time. We'll probably have 20-21 stages. I am not going to have any matches in the woods this year except for the finale. So no one's going to have any home field advantage. No one's shot any matches since last year up in there. So,
and it's changed a lot.
It has changed a lot.
And it continues to change.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So it ought to be a fun match. We're actually going to close off that whole section for the whole year. It'll be a good time. We're going to be working in the woods.
Also. My total ignorance, is that a 1 or 2 day match?
It's a 2 day match.
That's what I figured.
Friday will be the demo and sight in day and train up day. We're going to do that on Friday, and then Saturday and Sunday. I reserved the banquet hall again. And then in addition, we're probably going to put some tents on the outside. So all four sides of that building's open up. You know, in October, we ought to have nice weather.
That is a beautiful facility.
It is. And it's just so convenient. It's just right down the road.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
And they were so generous to accommodate us.
I just spoke with her the other day. So she said, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, in addition to all the seating that they have seating for 250.
Yep.
We're going to have tents on the outsides of those roll-up doors to open it up even more, and we're going to put tables and chairs underneath there also. So,
yeah, it's going to be a good time.
Yeah.
Man, congratulations to you for getting that honor.
Thank you.
It's
a lot of teamwork. You guys paved the way.
Well,
so,
you know.
It's not just one person. I mean, BJ and Chad and
yes,
you guys. Takes a lot of people to put on a match like that.
It does. And, you know, we'll all be there to help. So.
Great team of Matt and Dwayne. I mean, everybody just helps me out tons. I mean, I can't express my appreciation enough. It's awesome.
It's all good. So does anybody have anything else they want to add before we close this down? Everybody good? I know we could probably sit here and talk.
Oh, yeah, we can go another hour easy, but, yeah, that's probably a good point.
I'm going to need to turn the fans off because I think Amy's going to get floated away if she doesn't get something to eat soon. So we got to be really careful with that. So I want to thank you guys all for coming and joining in. This has been a lot of fun. I hope we get to do more of these together. And this is just now kicking off the new or improved PRN podcast.
Well, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see if it's improved. I don't know about improved.
How about we use the word refreshed? Okay. It's going to be a little bit different this time. Okay. But we do want to thank you all for joining. Don't forget to subscribe to the channel. If you have any questions, feedback, anything that you would like to have mentioned on the podcast, or if you're interested in becoming a guest or something like that, we're always going to be looking for a new guest on the show. Send me an email to precisionriflenetwork@gmail.com. Aside from that, consider supporting us on Patreon. You know, all this gear costs money, all this costs time, time costs money. So anything you can do to support the page, we sincerely appreciate it. With that being said, we're going to close it out, and we look forward to hearing from you on the next one. Take care, everybody.